Welcome to another weekly edition of Chatting with Charlie, hosted by Charlie Johnston, with his co-host, Dr. Joe Brickner, and presented by the Corps of Renewal and Charity. Visit us online at corac.co.
Welcome to Chatting with Charlie. I'm Dr. Joe Brickner. I'm the co-host of Chatting with Charlie. Our host is Charlie Johnston, who is the leader and founder of CORAC. All of you know Charlie, I'm sure, and all of you love Charlie as much as we do. Charlie, we got a special guest today.
I know. I mean, and trust me, this guy is great. If you don't believe it, just ask me. I'll tell you.
Our guest today is Charlie Johnston, and Charlie's been going around the country for a number of years, and quite often he gets asked about, he's not a cradle Catholic, and quite often he gets asked about his conversion situation and how that came about, et cetera. And so he committed just recently at one of the talks that he was at that he would share with folks his conversion story, and he would do it on one of the podcasts. And so this is it. Our star of the day is our host, Charlie Johnston. So, Charlie, you might give us some background on, you know, your growing up and everything. I know you've got some interesting things to tell us about your grandfather. I think he was in the clergy.
Well, no, that was my dad.
That was your dad.
And it was later in life. He was called, you know, in a lot of the fundamentalist Protestant denominations, they encouraged someone to become a pastor, and they had asked him to take over and pastor the church. Interestingly enough, I was Catholic at the time, and Dad talked constantly about stuff. I mean, one of the great things for Dad was when I came into the church, he read the Catholic Bible, he started reading church fathers. It was almost as much of a blessing for him as it was for me, because he loved to dig deep in the stuff. So when they were asking him and he was contemplating it, I talked to him for a long time. And I said, Dad, I think it's an authentic call. I think he can do a lot of good in that. And that was part of what went into his decision. And it was funny with Dad at one point, we loved to get deeply into the faith and that and different things. Well, one week, while I was down there, I told him, I said, Dad, this Sunday I'm coming to your church. And all that. Okay. After he was done, he gave a very good homily sermon, as they say. And the day after, on Monday, he told me, don't ever do that to me again. I said, what? He said, well, you helped me discover that we've all got a little vanity in us. Said, when you told me I was coming, you were coming to my church this week, I worked the rest of the week relentlessly to make sure I had no mistakes. I said, well, you did good, Dad.
Oh, that's funny. Well, tell me about when you were little, though. I thought there was somebody when you were little and they had snake oil on all kinds of different stuff.
No, they didn't have snake oil. They had snakes. My great-grandfather, Granddaddy Smith, was a snake handling preacher, and he was not a good man. He manipulated people. He just wasn't a good man. He exploited his position. He certainly had some charisma, but I got to tell you on that, with how he was, I knew when I was fairly young, by the time I got into high school, I knew that I had a certain charismatic presence because people would do what I wanted them to do.
Yeah.
I mean, a little kid once, my mother, she thought it was hilarious. Later, she told me that that I had to stop telling all my friends what to do. And I told her innocently, I said, but Mom, if I didn't tell them what to do, we wouldn't do anything. let us go on because we had a lot of fun. And that. But it disturbed me a lot that I knew I had some gifts, but I had it chilled me that man's blood was running in my veins. Mm-hmm. And I was very undemonstrative. I wouldn't even cheer at sporting events, and that I just stayed away from it. My sophomore year counselor, Ron Erdman, who was my senior year principal, and we became friends, and he really did a lot of good things for me. But one of the things he did was he said, Charlie, said, it's a gift. If you have it, it's a gift. Says, because your great-grandfather used it for bad, has nothing to do with you. You've got the same gift to him, but you had the choice of whether to use it for bad or use it for good. And that that was very powerful. That was this counselor, he did a lot of good things. He was just a wonderful man, Ron Erdman. Yeah, once my, then I was loaded for bear. There was a teacher that had a, there was a teacher, Mr. Brokaw, science teacher. He had it in for one of the kids in my in our class during sophomore year. And another kid did something just outrageous. And this teacher took my friend that he hated. And he had him suspended. Well, I went down loaded for bear. I don't like injustice, period. And I went down loaded for bear. And I'm just sitting in Mr. Erdman's office, and I'm raising Cain and everything. I was leaned over my elbow, and he was trying to calm me down, you know. And I just wasn't having it. So finally, he reared back, and he just knocked with his fist, knocked my elbow off the table. And as soon as he did it, I cocked my fist, and he said, see that, Charlie? He said, I know you think the world of me, but when you hit somebody, their first reaction is to hit back. Now, sometimes you do have to hit back, but you're smarter than that. There's better ways that you need to exhaust before you get to that point. That had a powerful impact. And it turned out that teacher, it was unjust, it was unfair, but that teacher had lost his son a little bit earlier that year. So, you know, and I thank God that Mr. Erdman got me to deal with it in a better way on the stuff instead of being loaded for bear right off the bat.
Well, what was your faith like when you were in high school and in early teens or early 20s?
Let me give this to you. When I was a little kid, you know, my dad came from a Methodist family originally. My mom was, she was the granddaughter of my granddaddy Smith, the snake handler and all that. And everybody, they were scared to death to be anything else. But they taught that. And a lot of it didn't make sense to me. I mean, because in that one, you would hear preachers. I remember as a kid thinking, and these are not the words that I used. I used whatever the words were appropriate. But the concept in my mind, you'd hear one preacher come in and lay down the law. And then next week, there'd be another preacher that come in and lay down the law that would contradict it and everything. I thought, wait a minute, all these people claim to have the Holy Spirit. And unless the Holy Spirit is the author of confusion, somebody's lying here. Really not pleased to begin with. I was a, oh gosh, what would you, well, I was a precocious young fella, you know. I was very smart and noticeably so. All of the relatives that they had, and mom and dad never knew this until I told them later, much later in life, that all of the relatives, the kids of Granddaddy Smith, they considered that I was smart to be prima facie evidence that I was on the highway to hell. And they thought that I had a devil. So anytime, if we were visiting and Ma and Dad went to do some errands, they'd get me in the garage and they'd start laying their snaky hands on my head and praying to get rid of the demon and all that. And when they would do that, I would just get very quiet. I felt myself in the Father's lap and I'd just endure it until it was over. But finally, I don't know, maybe I was 13 or 14. As you might have noticed, Joe, if you push the right button, I'm liable to go off. A lot of people in Korak try to push those buttons because they're amused to see me go off. Well, they had been praying over me and going through that. And after they were done, Uncle Hardy said, Oh, he's got a powerful demon in him. We can't begin to move him. And that just flew all over me. And I looked at him and said, who's stronger, God or the devil? And they all said, well, God is. And I said, well, if the spirit in you can't move the spirit in me, who's got God and who's got the devil?
Wow. Wow.
And after, they didn't ever did that to me again.
Wow. That's great.
So, you know, but we had that going on. It was a very triumphalist religion. They believed that only people who were, it was free Pentecostal holiness, only people who were holiness were going to heaven. Well, there came a time, I was almost 16 years old, and my paternal grandfather died. He was a Methodist and one of the finest men I have ever known in my life. He was preternaturally strong. When he was young, he was known in three counties for his amazing strength, which as I've noted before, none of which he bequeathed to me. but the man was amazing. He was gentle. Every time, if there was a crisis, he would soothe people and get through it. It was just instinctive to him. And people sought his counsel. God forbid, you didn't want to mess with that man. Of all the people in his family, I've never heard anyone tell me about him starting a fight, but he finished a bunch of them, and it didn't take him long to finish it. I mean, he was just an amazing, marvelous, kind, gentle man, especially for somebody that should be so physically strong to be so gentle, you know. Well, when he died, I was 16. And my mother, God rest her soul, the escape clause that they had, well, they said that everybody had to be holiness to get into heaven at all. The escape clause that they had was they'd say that, oh, they converted in their last breath. And I overheard my mother say that. I went off. I didn't go off publicly, but I remember I took up a big stick and just beat the snot out of a tree with it. And I walked away thinking that if that's true, this is the best man I've ever known. If this is true, then it's a fixed game. There's no hope for any of us. It's just a random thing. And if I'm going to go to hell, I'm going to do it for what I do believe and not for what I'm pretending to believe, but don't, you know? So what I did, I launched in that. I went on a project. I was going up to the library three or four times a week. What I was doing was researching the origins of various churches, various denominations. That actually was probably the first disturbing tickle about Catholicism in my head, because, you know, I could go look at the founder and name the founder of each one, and I discovered that only the Catholic Church and the Orthodox before they split have had a legitimate historical claim to having been found by Jesus. Now, my parents were good parents and I loved them. I didn't publicly break with them or do anything to embarrass them and all that. But mentally, that's not where I was anymore. After I got older, you know, when I was a young man out, obviously, we've discussed mystical experiences that I've had. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that Jesus was real. If I had ever denied him, I think he would have probably given me the old give slap on the back of the head. but I decided that I got to find a church that matches up with what that I can embrace with my heart. And I went to various denominations. And what I do, Joe, is I would sit there, and this is the fact. This is just the fact. Most Protestant denominations, they have their doctrinal emphasis and they know what they teach. They know the verses almost backwards and forwards, but anything that contradicts it, that's in the Bible, they just ignore it. They don't do it intentionally. I mean, we all have a gloss over things. So I would go to different churches, see what their doctrinal emphasis was, and then see what they were ignoring. And then I'd ask the preacher about it. A few preachers thought, well, that's a fascinating question. And we'd become friends, you know, but they didn't really have an answer. Most of the preachers would explain to me that they were the preacher and I was a layman and I needed to shut up and sit down, which told me that's not the place for me. Eventually, I gave up. I mean, I just thought there is no place for me. It was the summer of 1990. I was reading a lot of Reformation era literature, you know, Erasmus, Luther, different things. But oddly,
how old were you at the time?
At the time, I was 34.
34, okay.
And at the time, what I did, this was not Reformation era, but I picked up a copy of St. Augustine's Confessions. Boy, did that profoundly move me. There were a couple of things that had bothered me. One, in reading through the Bible, when people say that it never contradicts itself, yeah, it does. In Genesis, in the first, I mean, on Genesis is not the story of creation. It's two distinct and contradictory stories of creation intertwined. For example, in one chapter of Genesis, it says that God first made man, and then he made the animals, and and Adam named the animals. In the next chapter, it says God made all of the animals, and then as his crowning creation, he made man. Both cannot be true. One or the other can be true. So I was troubled by that. Reading St. Augustine's Confessions, first of all, it was wonderful. I identified him. He was kind of a public relations expert in his, and this is back in 400 AD, you know. I identified a lot with St. Augustine. But two things really stood out to me. One, at one point, he attacked people. He criticized people, denounced people who abuse scripture as mere history or mere science. On 400 AD, there was a lot less science and history than there is now. He said, what it is the word of God intended for your salvation. I thought about that. And suddenly, I mean, fireworks started going off in my head. And I started looking at a new thing. I thought about, how does Jesus work? Sometimes he said literal things to us, which many people rejected. And sometimes he said metaphorical things, the parable. You know what I mean? But all of it was designed to show us how to grow closer to God. So I started looking at everything that I had a problem with through that prism. And then truly, it did not contradict itself. And the other thing, at the end, St. Augustine goes through a soliloquy on time, the concept of time, you know, an artificial construct to contain us, that. The thing that in his discussion about time at the end of the Confessions that just blew my mind, it was very similar to Albert Einstein's theories on what time is and how it works. I thought, bloody Hades, you know, St. Augustine knew by faith, but it took science another 1,500 years to catch up. So I figured, I think maybe I need to talk to our Catholic Church and see what's the process you go through of joining up. So I called and they told me, oh, it was very good that RCIA classes were starting the next week. And they explained to me that, you know, you've got to go through, starting from the fall, you've got to go through classes each week until Easter, so that you know what it is and you know what you're choosing and you mean it. That too impressed me because I thought, they take it seriously. They're not just trying to recruit people to have numbers. They take it seriously. So I went to RCIA. It was wonderful. We had a big class. I think my class was 18 people. We always had a lot of people in that class. It may surprise you to learn that for the first month and a half, I was almost silent in class. I was kind of an enigma to everyone. They wondered what my deal was. And the reason for it was simple. I had been through many denominations I sat through to find the catch. And I was expecting to do that here, too. I was waiting for the catch. You know, I was going to sit there. In the meantime, I was reading furiously. I had to have read 20, at least 20 books, Church Fathers, the Documents of Vatican II, all of this sort of stuff in that first month and a half, trying to find the catch. And I finally decided, I don't think there is a catch. I mean, you'd have priests, you'd have deacons and all that say something that was contrary to what was there. But the faith itself, the magisterial faith, it was utterly consistent. Finally, what gave me away, we had one of those case studies where, you know, they give you a situation and you're supposed to choose what the right course is. But you're given two choices of what the right course is. I read through the case study. And when it came time for me to talk about it, my thing, I said that both of the given choices were ridiculously inadequate and what you should do. And I got very animated and explained what the true right course is. And if you were serious about that, I mean, you know, I got into it. Well, when I got done, and I was quite passionate about it, everybody is staring at me wide-eyed, like a tiger somehow slipped out of its cage and all that. I thought, oh, boy. Oh, boy, I've blown my cover. And the priest thinks about that, and he looks to a woman to my, what she would have been to my left, and said, okay, it's your turn. And she got all wide-eyed, looks around, finally says, what that guy said. So over the course of it, I never found the catch. When they had a rite of anointing, you know, they put their hands on your head. This is something that was very significant to me. I had always had just an aversion. People didn't put their hands on my head. I didn't like, you know, that the snaky ones when they were praying, that's what they did. Yeah. So I wasn't having on it, none of that. Even at that particular rite, a woman that I was dating then, who well knew, do not put your hands on Charlie's head. Your hands on your head before anointing you. And afterwards, she had said to me, she said, wow. She said, I was expecting you to faint when they put their hands on your head. And what was really striking was that I hadn't even noticed that it hadn't bothered me at all until she said something about it, because it all did bother me before. Finally, when we got to the Easter vigil, and on when I was coming in, it was so cool. When I was coming in, you know, I'm a single dad. My son was, 4 years old, I think. And he was wearing his little gray suit with his hair all neatly combed. And he's sitting there. A snapshot, you know, with your kids, there's certain things that become snapshots in your memory that will never leave.
Right.
Just as I was being baptized, I had never been baptized. I'll explain that in a minute. Just as I was being baptized, I looked over and he's there giving me a big grin and a wink and a thumbs up sign. That was so cool because he knew how important it was to me. And I should say, on the baptism, the reason I was never baptized was the first time my parents took me, I mean, because you know that fundamentalists love to baptize, and they baptize multiple times. First time my parents took me to be baptized, the car broke down, so we didn't make it. Second time they took me to be baptized, my dad got into a huge fight on the way, and we didn't make it. And after that, they just forgot that I hadn't been baptized. They didn't remember until I was old enough to where I wasn't going to be baptized without my permission on the thing. So that's where it stands. I was baptized in the Catholic Church. I was given a gift that night. You know, I was given several gifts. They give that to new people coming into the church. and it was a rosary. Now, with this rosary, I accepted everything that the church taught, but the rosary kind of scared me. I knew intellectually that the Holy Mary, Mother of God, I knew the history of it. I knew that that part was put on at a time when some heretics were denying that Jesus Christ was really God. It was written to underline Christ's divinity, not Mary's maternity. But whenever I to say it, I feel my Protestant self felt dread over it. And what I did was I thought, okay, I've gone with everything else. I'm given this gift. Said, Lord, you know I want to do what pleases you. So for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to say this rosary every day. If it's wrong, show me, and I'll quietly never do it again. If it's right, show me, and, you know, I'll be fully integrated. Well, after 3 weeks, I became quite the Marian devotee, and I'll leave it at that. and that's pretty much the story. I mean, I went to, I did find out a year later, I didn't know it at the time, that I started RCIA about a week after St. Augustine's feast day. So I've always considered St. Augustine the patron of my conversion on things. I later taught the very next year. I taught RCA for 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it immensely. I know one of my buddies, you know, Terry Scardino?
Yeah.
Region 7 coordinator, her husband, Rick, good friend of mine going back to high school and all that. When I came in, when, you know, he found that I had come in, he said, oh, man, I gotta let the Pope know that he's going to be hearing from this guy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was fun. And I enjoyed, you know, when I started teaching RCIA, one of the things that I did is every year I would open things up the same way. I would tell the whole class that I collected heresies. And if they could come up with one that I had never thought of and maybe even believed at one time, I'd give them $5. Well, I didn't collect heresies. But a lot of times when you've got a group of people together with, in a religious group, people self-censor because they don't want to offend anyone. I wanted to let people know from the start, whatever you got, go ahead and let's talk about it. And it really worked wonders. You know, it's funny. I got along the evangelicals, the people that were coming from an evangelical background. In the first few weeks, first few months, man, they would wrestle with they'd wrestle with me like an octopus and everything. But one thing that a lot of Catholics do not understand is you get a serious Protestant, they take the Bible very seriously. There's passages that they have elided, that they read over a dozen times without really thinking about it, but they take it seriously. You give them a big biblical argument, they take that seriously too, you know? So I was fortunate because I spoke Protestant fluently. Well, they'd start throwing scriptures at me and I'd start throwing them right back at them. Now, every year I'd have at least one of the evangelicals asking me to be their sponsor on Easter. And I did. But it was good stuff. I enjoyed it a lot. And we talked candidly. I know, I got to tell you, the one year, we had this man in his early 40s, very dapper dresser. And everybody, he didn't say much. Everybody wondered, what's his story? He was the mystery man that year. Well, one night after class, he had buttonholed me. He said, Charlie, can I talk to you outside for a while? Sure. Be glad to. And he starts telling me that from the time he was a teenager, he was a tent preacher traveling the South. And he made a lot of money doing it. I said, so that's your secret. everybody's been wondering about what your secret is. And he looked at me and he says, no, that's not my secret. I said, really? What is? He said, I've always wanted to, but I've never been sure whether there's a God at all. And I thought about that for a few minutes. I said, I'll tell you what, if I gave you a prayer that you could say with your whole heart, earnestly, would you say it every day? He says, oh, yeah, I'd say it 300 times a day. I said, no, don't do that. I said, once is enough if you say it with conviction. And I forbade him from saying it more than three times. And the prayer was simple. It was just that, oh, Lord, if you're really there, please show me. So, I mean, he was very enthused. Well, at the Christmas party, after the Christmas party, he came up to me, his face just glowing, and asked me to step out into the hall. And I did. And he looked at me, he shook my hand, and he said, thank you. And that was all. That was all that was needed. Mm-hmm. Didn't need any more. Because the thing is, what we think sometimes, what we think is we're going to bring people to Christ, we can't convert anybody. Conversion comes through direct interaction with Christ himself. Direct encounter. What we can do is we can throw obstacles up to block people from that encounter, or we can remove obstacles to remove people, to get people to that encounter. A lot of people who think themselves very Christian, they're throwing obstacles all the time by telling people what you have to be, what you need to be, just browbeating people. And that keeps them from Christ. And that offends me, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I'm glad to say, and he was grateful that I took a few obstacles away, and he asked directly for the encounter. He got it, and that was his conversion. Mm-hmm. Was all that was needed.
Cool. You know, it's said quite often that our best Catholics are those who are converted Catholics. And it makes a lot of sense, because if you're a cradle Catholic, you know, it's all you've ever known. You've never really, in a lot of cases, made that decision for yourself. And where I find that to be troublesome is, you know, you learned in your religion classes all the way up through 12th grade for most people, if they went that far in Catholic schools. You know, you're always learning the religion questions and answers and all this and that, but you never really go out on your own and explore like you did, you know, and explore the various faiths and things like that. And you never really make a decision yourself that, yes, this is the faith that I want to follow. It's just, well, you assume that that's the way it's always been. And I think that's an issue. I just wish there was something. I think confirmation was supposed to be that way, but confirmation for me was in the eighth grade, you know, and I was stupid. You know, I'm not the brightest guy in the world now, but I was stupid in the eighth grade, especially when it came to something like that.
So your relative didn't think you had a powerful demon, huh?
No. So, you know, if there was something that came later and it actually challenged you, you know, to make that decision, it seems like it'd be a better way to go. Now, there'd be a lot less Catholics probably, but, you know, how do you approach that?
Well, you know, Joe, I don't think there'd be a lot less Catholics. I think there might very well be more. And certainly converts to anything are usually the most zealous of those. But, you know, St. John Paul was a cradle Catholic. Okay. Pope Benedict was a cradle Catholic. I mean, you can get in those, things and just get caught in them. The thing is, that a question you asked in the last podcast sometime back about Pope Benedict, we lose the sense that this is a relation with a person. Jesus is a man. This is a relation. And if you do that and start seeing You know, most of the stuff, when you start doing intellectual things, it makes more sense than atheism or any of these things. I mean, atheism, you have to jump a huge leap of faith to be able to believe the nonsense they teach on the stuff. You've got a whole bunch of people that have decided they want to be smart on the cheap, and they think smart folks are atheists. I mean, anytime any of them try to lecture me, I tell them, you know, as soon as you have grappled with St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, and St. John Paul, and can successfully refute them, then I'll be interested in hearing what you say. Until not, you're just trying to play smart on the cheap, and I ain't buying it. You know? In fact, you know, I was friends. I was good friends with the man who was the national spokesman for the American Atheists. And he became good guy. He was killed in a plane crash a few years back. But he worked with me on pro-life projects and, you know, different things. He once told me after we had done a couple of interviews, man, Charlie, if all Christians were like you, I'd have to rethink some things. Thing is, what is Christianity about? So many people use it to beat other people over the head, which is a vanity. They're just trying to say, you've got to think like I do. So many, their definition of holy is like me. You know, I'm sorry, you haven't got it. And all, you've got to look towards God. When I was little, you know, I told her the story about them putting their hands on my head and praying to deliver the death. But they were mean as snakes. They were constantly browbeating everybody. They were constantly, you know, condemning other people. And I prayed. I mean, for years, I was absolutely silent on religious matters because I prayed to God, please don't let me say anything until the things I say will help build people up rather than tear them down. Because that's how you build up the kingdom. So I'm very grateful for having had that experience, because I know that there are some men that are more dangerous with a Bible in their hands than they would be with a 38 Magnum. We are called to build the kingdom, not to condemn people who are not exactly like us. By the same token, we are not to toss all the rules out. If Christ and the apostles said it, then, you know, I love the one thing that Pope Francis talked about, but I think he got it wrong too, was the business of accompaniment. You know, you think about it. When people think that they have got it all together and they know everything, are you the same person that you were 10 years ago? Do you believe everything that you believed 10 years ago?
No.
Hopefully you've gotten better. Well, if you've gotten better and smarter, then why would you think now that you've reached the pinnacle? And why would you so resent anybody that's on a different stage in their walk towards Christ than you are? You know, you should be helping them along rather than trying to cut them off at the knees. So, you know, there's a lot of things there. We have to build each other up without, you know, I know there's a movement. You got all the people that don't believe in Christianity anymore that like to quote things together. So, you know, they talk about, well, Jesus forgave the woman who was caught in sin. Yes, he did. And he didn't tell her, you're good. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
He said, go and sin no more.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I like to think that the great challenge for us, and people get this exactly backwards, be rigorously demanding of yourself and be rigorously charitable with everyone around you. If you do that, you'll help build up the church, you'll help build up the kingdom, and you'll help build up the people around you. Instead, most people are rigorously demanding of the people around them and rigorously forgiving of themselves, you know. There's nothing so easy to condemn as a sin that you're not tempted by. Like I said, you know, God makes all of us uniquely. And there's nothing so easy to justify as a sin that you are tempted by. All of us have our failings and the sins that tempt us. just because somebody else's sins are not exactly the same as yours, you're putz if you condemn what they do and you don't look, you know, Jesus said it. Yeah. Worry about the splinter in your neighbor's eye while you still have the beam coming out of your own eye.
Right.
Okay. So, well, but I will say this, next year I will have spent half of my lifetime as a Catholic. And, you know, at 68, I formally was received in when I was 35, but my conversion came in the summer of 1990 when I was 34. So next year, half of my lifetime, and Lord have, you know what it's like, Jim? You've seen the old Wizard of Oz. I know your wife loves the flying monk.
That's right.
But, you know, the first part of it is in black and white. And then they go on to live in color.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my conversion was.
That's cool.
You know, I had authentic Christianity before, but I didn't have the fullness of it. And when I came into the church, it was in living color.
That is a great way to explain it. That's cool. Well, Charlie, is there anything else you want to add to this?
Well, I'm very grateful. I'll add this. And I'm going to touch on what I believe are my particular experiences on that. When I was a little kid, when I was 7 years old and first realized what my mystical experiences were, I was very shaken up. You know, I've seen a news story about some guy that killed somebody because of what those voices told him. Mm. And I realized then, again, I was precocious. I realized then that most people that heard voices and could see people that others couldn't were plumb crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had told my angel, I had asked him, I had told him that, that, you know, I was glad to go with the training. It was kind of fun and everything. But that the minute he told me to hurt somebody, the jig was up because I was going to go to a doctor and confess everything. And second, while I'd go through all the training, I would not act. I would not act publicly unless there was an authority on earth that I could submit to with my whole heart, and it allowed me. My angel was very pleased, by the way. I expected him to be mad at me, but he was so pleased, I thought he was going to take me out for ice cream, and I'm still a little resentful that he didn't. But in any case, when I came into the church, when I went through it, I thought, oh, my Lord, now I have the authority that I can submit to with my whole heart.
Yeah.
That powerful for me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I thank God. You know, and certainly he gave me enough experiences so that I'm not a triumphalist. I love all of our Christian brothers and sisters, you know, and anybody who's a faith towards the true God, whether they're Jewish, Christian, that they're serious and that aren't using it a way to try to leverage their position to dominate others. Yeah. They're my brothers, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a St. John Paul Catholic. I had admired him for a good 10 years before I came into the church. I admire the Reverend Franklin Graham and his father, the late Billy Graham. I admire Reverend Rafael Cruz. That's Ted Cruz's dad. You know, I know him. I have sat at dinner with him several times. And don't quote me on this, but I actually like him better than I like Ted. you know, and just we're all working to try to build up the kingdom. Those people that are working to try to build people up rather than tear them down, I respect, I admire, and I'm glad to call them my brothers in Christ.
You know, I think that's the reason why that I love Dr. David Jeremiah. I listen to him every morning. He's got a 26-minute program every day. And usually it's a series. He just finished a series on David. He's just a great biblical scholar and a great teacher, but he always, I mean, he always says the right thing, and he always influences you to do the right thing. And I just love that about him. It isn't like I don't know how many radio stations he's in, 3,000, and he's all around the world and everything. But he says, when he's trying to raise money, he says, "Don't you give me a dime until you've supported your local chair, your local parish." He says, "That's where your tithing should go, is to your local parish. Anything over and above that, yes, we need it in order for our ministry to be successful, and we want you to do that. But," and then he'd always, every Friday, he says, "Don't you listen to my program on Sunday, and instead of going to your local parish," he says, "that's where you need to be, and that you need to be in that community, and you need to be active." He said, "DVR us or record it somehow and listen to us later, but," he said, "your local parish is where you need to be." And I respect somebody that does that. And then he's always talking about a relationship with Jesus. That's always the number one thing, is your relationship with Jesus. It's not following this rule and that rule. No, it's what is your relationship with Jesus? And he's a Baptist, Southern Baptist, but I think he's a saint. I really do. I think he's like Billy Graham and a lot of people like that.
Well, on that thing, and I think you're right on target with it. One of my spiritual directors, my favorite confessor ever, had told me, I so valued my dad. He said, why don't you push him, evangelize him, get him towards the Catholic Church. Isn't that what they should do? And I told him I wouldn't do it. And I told him, I said, "You know what, Father?" I said, "No one living today is responsible for the divisions in Christianity. None here did that." Now, you think about the nature of God. Isn't it God's providence that if you're going to have some boats pulling away from the mothership for a while, that he would have good men and women that he would want to be in each of those boats to help keep the connection on these things? I said, so if he denies them the knowledge that this is the church he founded, he has his reasons, and if they stay faithful, they'll have their reward. We each have things that we don't understand and we don't know despite our thinking. So, I'm just thankful for it. I'm thankful for all of those. A guy who was a Methodist once, friend of mine, and he had told me he was thinking about converting, that he was really drawn to the Catholic Church in many ways. And he had studied some things for a while. And after a few months, he said, "Charlie, I have a great respect for what the Catholic Church is, but I'm not convinced at this point." And I said, "Well, then stay a Methodist." And he was surprised. He said, "Why wouldn't you try to make me become a Catholic?" I said, "I'll tell you what. I said, you're a very good Methodist. If you became a Catholic when you were not convinced, you'd be a bad Catholic. And trust me, we have enough of those already."
Oh, that's great. Well, we can wrap this up if
One more thing to wrap it up.
Okay.
Again, the triumphalism, the series, the TV series that Angel Studios did, The Chosen.
Yes.
I love that series.
Yeah,
I
me too.
was looking, I saw on some social media where somebody was saying, I mean, some were criticizing it, that it's Protestant. No, it's not. They got Protestants and Catholics working together on that. But I want to say this. I love The Chosen for a lot of different reasons, but while Jonathan Rumi is not exactly the Jesus of my experience, he's closer than any portrayal I have ever seen.
Wow.
So, I heartily endorse it, and I just love it. After watching each of the seasons, I mean, I look forward to the day where I could binge watch every episode that was made all over again, because it's just magnificent.
We do that. We've got all three seasons, you know, on DVR. And I mean, we watch it all the time. We go back and we have our favorite episodes that we'll go back and watch. We probably watch, she likes the one on Nathaniel underneath the tree.
Yeah.
That's her favorite one. And I bet we've watched that 15 times, you know. Sure. You always go back to it. It is just, it's so well done. But, you know, the thing that I think he did, trying to think of the guy's name that is the producer of it. And anyway, the thing that he did, I think, that was brilliant was he brought in a rabbi, a priest, and an evangelical and used them as sounding boards, you know, to get their perspective of everything. He didn't necessarily follow exactly what they each one of them wanted to do, but he got that perspective. And the way he presents it is so real. It's just so real. Yeah. You can relate to not only Jesus, but the rest of the people there, their faults. And it's just a great series. It really is.
Heart doesn't go out to Matthew, you know.
That's a unique way of portraying him, you know. It's just really unique. But
it really is.
So
it was not my favorite episode, but I think my favorite moment, because it just tickled me. At the wedding at Cana.
Yeah.
When they were all doing dancing afterwards, I think it was Peter, I'm not sure who, but said, you know, Jesus, Andrew is such a terrible dancer. Can't you do something about it? And Jesus said, some things even I can't.
What a great line. You know, and it makes him real, you know, because he would probably say something like that. I mean, it just really makes him real. And it's that's why I think so many people are drawn to it, because they've made him real, so.
It's magnificent. Right. They made him real, but kept it. They've lived fidelity to the Bible.
Yeah, yeah. So,
in any case, now you know, if you want to know anything more about my conversion, check with me after in the next life.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for taking the time to share that with us. I know, a lot of people are very interested, and it's very kind of you to share that experience with us. So thank you so much. And thanks for all you do for CORAC. I mean, you basically live in poverty, and you travel around the country. And every time you come back from all your travels, you're sick for 3 weeks because you've spent yourself. And I just want you to know that we all just appreciate you and we love you.
Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. But, in terms of living poverty, I've gotten fat living poverty. I blame Connie for that.
Well, you know, I know all the way along the way. If you were in Colorado the whole time, you'd definitely be in poverty. But when you go on the road, even though you don't stay in these great places there, but people feed you well. They feed you.
They really do.
But you're worth it. You're worth it. Well, thanks, Charlie, and look forward to the next time.
Indeed. God bless.
God bless you, too.
And until then, acknowledge God, take the next right step, and be a sign of hope.
Thank you.
Thank you.